Welcome to Health Connections, a show about people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, joined once again by Dr. Carol Myers, an associate professor in the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. Dr. Myers, welcome.
Welcome to you and welcome to our listeners. Hello.
Well, our focus this week is not so focused. At least this is what we were just talking about before we came on the air. What to do about the Affordable Care Act? It's something we've talked about before, but it's a question that remains unanswered. And right now, the people in Washington who are helping to make that decision, whatever the future may look like for the ACA or anything that succeeds it, are pulling in different directions. This month, President Trump signed executive orders that he says will make health coverage easier for people to get and maybe more affordable. Last week, Senators Lamar Alexander of Tennessee and Patty Murray of Washington announced the compromise plan that we had done a whole show about last month that we thought was dead is suddenly back. And then Trump was criticizing that plan. So there's a lot of uncertainty, which has been the buzzword for us almost through the entire series that we've been doing here on Health Connections. Anytime we talk about the future of insurance, coverage, anything like that that has to do with federal and state government, one thing I've heard you say frequently is uncertainty. Seems like that's still the word we're talking about.
Absolutely. Questions about the Affordable Care Act just aren't going away, and they really are very prominent on the radar screen of Americans across east to west. So I'm not surprised. I'm surprised that we're still in this chaotic and working at counter purposes that we're seeing. In one week, we have the president issue two executive orders that, if you were to characterize them, were certainly not supportive of the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. They looked as if we can't get it done in Congress, we'll get it done through the executive branch. And then at the same time, more quietly behind the scenes, we have Senators Alexander and Murray working on their bipartisan bill. And these almost seem incongruent. But I think what it tells us is, one, is that healthcare coverage is very important and that people have expectations about the Affordable Care Act. Certainly, it can be better. The debate is, do you tear it down without having something in its place, or do you work on what's in place until you have something better?
That gets us to something we've talked about before, CSRs, which are cost-sharing reductions. Those are payments that are made from the federal government to insurance companies and help to, in part to help subsidize lower premiums, or at least keeping premiums from rising to astronomical levels or at astronomical rates. What is the current state of those CSRs? I know this is covered in the Alexander Murray bill that has been resurrected, but it's something that President Trump has also vocally disagreed with.
Okay. Let's start at the same place for everybody, and then people will go where they want to go. But the CSRs, the cost-sharing reductions, the payments that are made to insurance companies are for subsidies for reduced out-of-pocket cost for people that are at 250% or less of the federal poverty level and are enrolled in what we call marketplace or exchange healthcare plans. So basically, these folks at 250% or less of the federal poverty level pay less for things like co-payments, out-of-pockets, deductibles, and co-payments. So their price is not the same at the time of service than folks that don't have those subsidies. Now, you mentioned tax credits. Well, those tax credits are to actually buy your health insurance before you ever use it. So right now, we're looking at the CSRs, which are reductions in costs to low-income people at the time of service. And they are required. We have been paying those without congressional approval. And I think that's important because one of the major roles of the U.S. Congress is appropriation of funds for government programs. Opponents of the ACA sued to get the CSR payments stopped. A federal judge agreed with them, but the Obama administration appealed, and during that appeal, continued the CSR payments. When President Trump assumed office, he continued those CSR payments, although I would assume for a very different reason. I think he probably had the assumption the Affordable Care Act was going away. So by an executive order, he has said, we're not paying them anymore. And this is where all the chaos is, because without the CSR payments, there's some very detrimental effects.
As such as?
Well, one is the one that we feel most acutely, particularly this time of year, as rates are being established and we're getting ready for enrollment, is premium increases.
Right.
It's plain and simple. Nationwide, it's been estimated that premiums will go up about 20% without the CSR payments. In Tennessee, we saw that range go from 21 to 42%.
Hmm.
So what happens when premiums go up? Well, when premiums go up, people can't afford it, so they may be less likely to buy the insurance plans. And there's an unintended consequence. As premiums go up, actually the tax subsidies have to go up to offset those costs of increased premiums. Whereas it's been said that cutting the CSR payments is going to help with our federal deficit and the U.S. Treasury will be paying less, paradoxically, it will actually be paying more because the offset of the increase in subsidies for premiums.
There's going to be a cost no matter where it's coming from. Do we know which one would be the higher cost? I mean, do we know if you cut off CSRs, it'll cost us X number of dollars more to pay these back end costs that may result?
Well, really, the CBO, during one of the bills that
was
being... That's
the Congressional Budget Office. They're
yes.
the folks who kind of do the bean counting for the federal government.
It was estimated that we would see an increase of $194 billion more dollars over 10 years with the loss of the CSR payments. So in answer to your question, the increase in tax subsidies far exceeds the savings that would be attributable to not paying the CSRs.
I wondered about that. Another of President Trump's executive orders talked about association plans. And you and I were talking about this just briefly off mic before we got started. I confess, I don't know much about these kinds of plans. So walk us through what that executive order was about and what it sets out to do.
One of the principles of insurance, as we've talked before, is the more people you have in the plan and the more diverse the people are, the more we can flatten out the hills and valleys and have more reasonable premiums. You don't want a health insurance plan that just covers healthy people. For those people, it's a good deal. It's going to be lower cost, but it actually will raise the cost for the other folks that are older or sicker. So the idea is you blend them together to create a more even playing field. The association health plans do not do this. And that's because the executive order that was signed not only allows small businesses to band together to purchase health care, which is not a bad strategy, but it allows them to offer cheaper and therefore skimpier plans.
Mm.
That's the concern. You're siphoning off the healthy people from the ACA plans.
And the effect of that on the other plans that are non-association plans would be?
Increased premiums, plain and simple.
Well, let's talk about the Alexander Murray package. This is one we've talked about before. This was proposed earlier in the fall when we were getting closer to that federal budget limit that we were talking about on September 30th. And in the lead up to that, it appeared that the bill just kind of died. It didn't really go anywhere. It lost support. Well, it's back. It came back, at least to me, somewhat unexpectedly last week. And it includes funding for the CSRs that we were talking about a little bit earlier. Restored funding for outreach and enrollment. This has been a sharp criticism of President Trump's treatment of the ACA, is that he has cut back a lot on the outreach, that is, letting people know when open enrollment is, cutting back the open enrollment, reducing basically the amount of money the government spends to let people know what their options are, and the Alexander Murray bill kind of puts that back together. So tell me a little bit about what this bill is about, what it proposes.
Okay. Well, one of the things that's important is when we look at the Alexander Murray bill, we need to look at the changes since Senator Alexander and Senator Murray convened the HELP Committee hearings, which at that time their intent was short-term fixes in anticipation of the enrollment for 2018 and the fixing of the premiums for 2018. They were operating in a very short window of time.
The legislative window that you're talking about has closed.
Yeah, the original intent of Senators Alexander and Murray was to put in a short-term fix that would help with 2018 premiums and assure that we would have CSR payments through 2018 and then some said longer so that premiums would be good and it would be done in time for enrollment. Well, that window closed, but they haven't given up on the idea, which was the big idea, of a short-term stabilization of the marketplace. So what they're doing is they're still looking at funding for CSRs, too late for the rates for 2018, right as the enrollment is starting November 1st. They did allow, in the bipartisan spirit, some changes in what we call the 1332 waivers. And these are applications that the states submit to be able to do something custom within their exchange plans. It's been something that's important, particularly to Republicans. And now they are allowing some change in process, which there was general consensus about that, and some limited changes in provisions. So they've changed some of the affordability requirements, but the important thing is they are not allowed to change the pre-existing conditions protections. They also, as you've said, restoring funding for outreach and enrollment for the 2018 enrollment, which starts November 1st. One of the things that conservatives have been calling for and others is an expansion of what we call copper plans. All of the plans on the exchanges are at different metal levels. We have currently bronze plans, silver plans, and platinum plans. Most people, about 70%, are in silver plans. But some have said, give us an option for a catastrophic plan. And those have taken on the nomenclature of copper plans. And now copper plans will be expanded under the Alexander and Murray bill if it passes.
I wanted to ask you about the phrase catastrophic plans. To me, a catastrophe is a big, bad deal, and to have that adjective attached to a plan, what do we mean when we say catastrophic plan? How is that defined?
Well, really it says that insurance will not cover something unless it's very major. You actually have to have, you do not have coverage for more incidental expenses. When you go to the provider for a well visit.
Like or preventive care, annual physical, dental checkup.
Yeah, usually one of the defining characteristics of catastrophic plans are very high deductibles.
Okay.
So your insurance doesn't kick in until you've had a lot of expenses, which often is associated with something catastrophic that you weren't expecting, a very bad car accident, something like that.
Yeah, I wondered about. Thank you for clearing that up. There's one more thing that I wanted to get to here that connects back to our conversation about CSR payments, and it's something that President Trump said last week as he was criticizing the latest iteration of the Alexander-Murray bipartisan proposal. He said he didn't want to continue the CSRs in part because it was his opinion that those payments are a windfall for insurance companies, that basically the companies are making bank off these payments to the federal government. And I don't think that's necessarily true. Those payments actually kind of circulate through and end up benefiting consumers and not so much the insurance companies.
Correct. Again, the basic fact is that subsidies to low-income participants in exchange plans are part of the Affordable Care Act. It is required that the insurance does this. So the payments are to offset those subsidies. So I don't know that you can put that into the category of being a windfall or being a bailout. However, I think this is one of the areas where we're so polarized that we're not really discussing what some of the issues are. And one of the issues are that insurance companies in the individual market or the exchanges or the marketplace plans, all those terms apply, had very difficult, rocky start. And they had poor financial performance within this market. During 2017, we started to see some correction where insurance companies were gaining traction and actually seeing some profits in the individual market. Now, in part, I think that was because of a one-time correction in premiums, where premiums went up pretty high in 2017, and that helped to enhance financial performance. So that's something we need to watch. But then I think there is the other thing that a lot of people are uneasy about, the very large managed care companies. Let's talk about companies like United Healthcare, Aetna, Anthem, Cigna, actually are having record profits. So that kind of raises people's alarm. But I do want to say that's something we should look at. We're one of the few countries that have for-profit insurance companies to the extent that we do. But the individual market is just a small slice of their portfolio. So it's not correct to think that their profitability is built off of the back of the individual market.
Well, as we talked about, the watchword is uncertainty. There will be a lot of moving parts to this in Washington, especially, I imagine, as we get close to that November 1st enrollment period that you're talking about. Dr. Carol Myers on Health Connections, as always, very informative and a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.